Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We got missiles and tensions and missiles. Tech earnings spin markets higher. The Fed is still in play, and our guest today is Adam Wright, creator of Bunkio, a game that we're going to find more about. All this and much more on episode number 622 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there, Andrew Horowitz. I'm in a good mood today. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining me every week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Yes, I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. For those of you who don't know me, maybe it's your first time listening to the show. I'm also the president, founder of Horowitz & Company, which is a fee-based investment advisory firm. We manage several different strategies, from the most conservative in our global allocations all the way to the conservative side, and that ranges more aggressively as well. And to our very aggressive long-short strategy, which is the managed growth strategy. We use equities, options, trading, day trading, as well as some other ways of doing our thing in that portfolio strategy. To our investology, which is a robo-style, a robo-esque type of environment where we have technology-enhanced and advisor-crafted portfolios. So, lots going on here at Horowitz & Company. Lots going on in the markets, and we're going to be talking about that. I'm going to be out of the office, out of the country, as a matter of fact, over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to try to squeeze in a show. I'm going to South Africa. I have a friend that has a very substantial vineyard there outside of Cape Town, and we're going to spend a few days in that area and touring and going to the vineyards and tasting, and it's going to be great. Then we have about 5 days in another area doing a safari and doing the whole safari thing. So there should be some fun things. I'm going to be posting some of my pictures on Instagram. And if you're not following me on Instagram, I pretty much just do food all the time. It's Dad Bod Food Blog. Dad Bod Food Blog is my Instagram name if you do want to follow me there. And again, it's just foodie stuff. Primarily, at least. But I'm going to need your help, and I'm going to need your help over the next couple of weeks if we're going to get some shows in here, and specifically I want to do some listener question shows and answer some questions there. And what I need you to do, you got to do it quickly because I'm going out of town. I'm going to try to squeeze this in before I go, but I need it by Tuesday in about 2 days from where the show is. Where are we now? We're in the 28th of July, so I'm going to need this by the 30th. Let's see about that. 30th in the afternoon. Not too late. Send it to me. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on Ask Andrew and ask whatever question you want, and we're going to get to them. We have a few already set up, ready to go, but I want your questions, whether it comes to finance, economy, understanding markets, understanding what's happening with money in general, credit cards, cars, I don't know, whatever it is. Any financial question is fair game. So make sure to do that. Help us out. Help us get a really good show for when I'm out of town. Now, I have a question. What is with the missiles? Have you been watching that we had some rockets fly off in North Korea? Land in the sea, okay, fine. Then a couple of days later, we have Iran shooting off long-range missiles or mid-range missiles, whatever you want to call them. Flew about 600 miles, landed on Iranian territory. But still, what's the point here? You know, the whole idea was to stop the nuclear ambitions of these countries. And I don't know if they're talking to each other and saying, hey, I got a great idea to really piss them off around the world. Let's shoot off a few rockets. Whatever's going on, it's a problem. And we have to really look at this as provocation in the form of probably ahead of a presidential election. But the problem is that right now there was a lot of warnings given, and there was a lot of you know, if you do that, if you cross this line, if you're going to do something like that, well, there's going to be consequences. Yet nothing's happened. And I think that's what probably what's happening. They're going to find out how far they can actually push the entire world with their ambitions here. Very weak showing overall, in my opinion, by the politicians around the world trying to curtail some of this. And I hope that it just stops. I hope that the process of this provocation, but it won't. So I can hope all I want, but it's not going to. The good news is so far it hasn't really impacted the markets because everybody knows it's just a sign of basically chest pounding. Look at me. Look what I got. I could do these rockets and it doesn't matter what you say. Until they do something serious is another whole discussion. So I don't know if this really has any impact on the markets. It probably will have some impact on oil and the price of oil, because what you have here is obviously any unrest in the Middle East does have a bit of an impact on what happens with oil prices. And you can see them moving all over the place every time we get another piece of news out of what's going on, whether we shot down a drone or somebody got a cargo ship or an oil tanker, or now they're shooting off rockets. And, you know, it's this whole thing that's going on. But we're here to talk about markets and finances, so really not that. But you got to keep that in the back of your mind because there is a risk to markets if this does flare up out of control. There's a risk to natural resources. There's a risk to pricing. There's a risk to overall concern and volatility. VIX very low right now. Maybe a good idea to start thinking about, is that a good mechanism to buy for protection and utilizing options on the VIX to do so? Something to think about. Something that may be very wise to do as we're reaching all-time highs in the markets and levels right now that maybe are sustainable, but with a Fed meeting on the way, and on top of that, much of this tension's happening halfway through earnings season at this point. We have several Department of Justice announcements recently about how there's going to be reviews and looks into various social media and major platforms, specifically Amazon and Facebook and Google. That's who it looks like they're targeting. So maybe something to think about. Take a read up on VIX options and what that means. I mean, it's a protection mechanism. And obviously the VIX has been coming down very significantly over the last number of weeks and months as the markets have been continuing to climb to new highs. So therefore, that's the time that you want to think about putting on protection on a portfolio when it is low, when it is cheaper to do, and when markets are feeling like nothing can go wrong. And here we are at all-time highs in the markets. We have decent earnings coming out of the technology sector for the most part. We had banks come up. You know, I have this deja vu. This whole earnings season, the way it's shaping up right now, is kind of reminding me a little bit about earnings seasons that we've seen in the past, last several quarters, right? Don't you think so? Where we had analysts coming in and downgrading earnings and concern about companies making their profitability, headwinds abound and slowdown in markets around the world and slowdown in the economies around the world and, you know, what's going to be next and they're going to have a hard time with tariffs. And analysts came in and did their job to a degree. Companies did their job by managing those expectations pretty well and lowballing and sandbagging and holding back on really a lot of their good news. So when the earnings came out, we are seeing that, wow, magical. Companies are beating earnings. This is a standard process. You know, 1 or 2 cents, banks beat by really weird numbers. Technology companies usually have a bit of a range, but most companies are beating by a couple of pennies here or there. And again, this all managed pretty well, but remember, we came in with very low expectations. So what the result of that has been is that when we see that these beats are happening, a lot of people trade on headlines and therefore they're buying stocks on the idea that there is this beat, you know, probably averaging about 70%, 72% beats on EPS, revenues coming in slowing for some companies, better for others. But again, a slowdown overall in the big picture of earnings and revenues, but beating estimates. So it's all a management of the expectation that really goes into where market values are, until one day somebody wakes up and says, wait a second, what valuation are we? How far have we come with earnings really not progressing that substantially? So right now, again, beats are good. The outlook, a little soft in some companies. But even if it's a little soft by companies, many players right now are looking at that as, well, it's just companies being conservative, which, you know, again, management of those expectations. So they're giving them the benefit of the doubt, and that's good. But we have to look at really what's going to happen moving forward. I'm not making any predictions here. I'm pretty surprised that companies have been that good overall. I mean, by just a blanket statement, generally speaking, companies have been pretty good at managing all these extra expenses and not passing on a lot of the cost to the consumer. And we know that because we haven't seen any inflation kick up yet. So it's a pretty interesting environment, if you think about it, where companies are able to withstand a lot of the headwinds that we're seeing around the world with the slowdown in the economy and increase in costs. I mean, that's a pretty good situation to be in if you can continue to move forward with those kind of odds stacked against you. So kudos to the companies in the area that also so far have posted. But again, it is reminiscent of past earnings seasons where you had this banks come in and question about the bank's earnings and soft, and a few techs come in and then there's questions. Then all of a sudden, a few of the big boys come in. Some of them do really well. Some of them don't do. We had Facebook come in that was, I would say, lukewarm. The outlook was really problematic with the cost factors that are associated with the latest need to protect them, well, protect us against them is essentially what's going on. I mean, they're being investigated for all sorts of things. And the last few weeks, the information has been coming out from Facebook almost daily about user data and phone numbers being used and leaks and Messenger for young children and ability to have other people get into the conversations. And I mean, it's like day in and day out, we're finding more and more that's going on with Facebook wrong. How they really don't have tight controls over any of their data at all. And yeah, they paid a $5 billion fine last week, but oh my gosh, what is that in the big scheme of things when you consider their earnings and the amount of money they have on hand? So yeah, we have all-time highs in the markets. And here's what I'm thinking. Next Wednesday is the Fed meeting. Tuesday and Wednesday is going to be the meetings in general. Wednesday is the big rate reveal at 2 p.m. and a 2:30 conference with Jerome Powell. And I think really at this point, the Fed's pretty stuck. It seems like they really don't have a lot of room to wiggle right now. They've gotten themselves from their conversations and their strategy of communications to provide an outlook and give the market a heads up on what they're thinking. Pretty much they're going to do a rate cut. Probably with the fact that we have a pretty strong economy right now, excluding any of the impact of global ex-US, I would think they're going to cut the least possible 0.25, 0.25%, and then they're going to see what happens. I don't agree with it. I think when we have an economy at a 3.7, a 3.8% unemployment rate, inflation close to 2%, and on top of that, we're seeing a GDP that's still over 2%, 2.5%, that's fine. And if, in fact, they disappoint the markets, and so what? The markets take a little bit of a dip, 5%, 7%. Think about where we are this year already. The markets can withstand that. Now, people aren't going to be happy immediately, but the markets can withstand that. Now, we did see GDP dip last week to 2.1%, although that was better than the consensus of 1.8% that was expected. What's interesting to note is where we are actually looking backward, because it takes a while to get all the numbers into the GDP and get the finalized, absolute, kind of written in concrete number. last year's GDP revision finally came out, and over the weekend it showed that a revision was now less than 3% for 2018. In fact, the Commerce Department's annual revision of GDP data also showed the economy grew 2.5% in the 12 months through the fourth quarter, which was down from the previously reported 3%. So what does that mean? Well, as expected, I think, and covered here extensively, the economy is slowing. There's nothing really to fear right now. We're still growing. Let's get that fact straight. The economy is still growing, but it's slowing. Just not growing as fast as it was. That's okay. It's just not as strong as some people expected that was going to happen with all these tax cuts and all that. And definitely not the greatest economy of all time, as ballyhooed and projected by the White House. There's definitely not. So what we have here is a somewhat of a Goldilocks situation. We have moderate growth. We have a Fed that is looking to stimulate. We have earnings that are holding up pretty well. We have an administration and Congress that are bickering and can't get anything done. And a White House that is all about the stock market. So it's pretty much a good situation, not to mention the buybacks that are going on. That helps too. So we have this pretty a Goldilocks situation, and it's a pretty good situation for stocks, and that's, in a nutshell, why they're going up. So if you're wondering what's happening here, it's all these different things. The one wrench that can be thrown into the engine and just muck things up right now, aside from the Fed making a misstep, is pretty much the impact of what's going to happen with other economies around the world. And if they can't pick up the pace, Mario Draghi last week said, you know what, in Europe, it's worse and getting even worse moving forward. Markets didn't like that. Even though that was a signal for more stimulus, markets like, whoa, hello. The Fed, the central bank of Europe, ECB, is saying things aren't good. They don't usually say that. It must be a lot worse than we anticipated. So that's the one thing that I think can really throw a ringer into this, you know, problem and really just mess things up pretty well. But other than that, you know what? I still think it's a pretty good idea to get some protection against volatility right now. With that, let's get to our guest today, because it's a bit of a sidestep from our usual discussions. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. And our guest today is Adam Wright, and he is from Bunkio. We'll get to the bottom of this and understand a little bit more about what this all is all about. He's the founder of this interesting new concept idea. So I thought we would get him on to talk about it. Adam, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So you have this concept, this idea, this new app product, kind of a cross between, I guess it's a cross between gaming and saving in a way. But let's just back up. So I saw this, you sent me your information, and I said, I don't know if this is the next great idea or it's going to be a total waste of time for individuals. I don't know. We'll have to see. But it was kind of interesting. So I thought maybe you could explain a little bit what this whole thing is about.
Definitely. Well, I created the concept around my own problem. Throughout my entire life, have been constantly overdrafting, and I never really knew what was wrong to me. It just is something I sort of ignored and didn't want to think about much. And I think a lot of the demographic who also experiences this are very much the same. It's not pleasant. It's nothing that makes me feel like I could ever really even get a girlfriend, because I just don't feel like I'm normal like my other friends. So it's something I wanted to create a solution for. And I stopped drinking about 2 years ago. I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I learned a lot about sort of addiction and recovery. And I created an app that could help me recover from my spending problem. And that's the basis behind what you're seeing.
All right, so let's back up here. That was a lot.
Yeah.
That was a lot of information. Hold on, let's just back up. So first of all, you had a problem with spending. It wasn't a problem with overdrafting. It was a problem with spending. Is that the first basic point?
That's the first basic point.
Okay. So you had this problem with spending, whereas you would just spend regardless of the money that you had for whatever reason and spent it on a variety of different things, whatever that was. Obviously, yep. It was booze for a while, from what you're telling yep. me, right?
It was.
Okay. So you had this problem with spending, and you didn't want to face it. You didn't want to deal with it. It was wrapped up in a few different things that were going on. There was a variety of addictions going on. And you said, you know what? I got to find a way that I can stop myself from hurting myself. And in this case, it was a combination of drinking, but let's just stick to the finance for a second, but hurt myself financially. Am I so far with this?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're on point.
All right. So you created something that would allow for you to get over this hurdle. Now, let's back up for a second, because I think that a lot of people don't really have a problem with overdrafting. I think that issue is, I think that is a soft way to put it. It's a spending problem.
Yep.
Right.
But I would say that the overdrafting is sort of the tangible statistic that comes out of it. $34 billion in overdraft fees last year. And I don't think a lot of people who are actually having spending problems are aware, because it's painful to think about. And so they just sort of ignore it. And the only statistic I can really find to back it up is the overdraft fee stat.
Right. I mean, and some of that's just simple mistakes, and some of that's just whatever it may be. You know, checks coming in may be delayed, but you spent the money already and it wasn't just smart planning and it was a planning problem. But I get what you're saying, but the bulk of it is obviously due to the fact that the bank is essentially covering your check, your spending, your payment, your debit card payment. Because don't forget, there's also another whole element here, right? Isn't the whole element of, there may be overdraft fees, but what about all the interest that's paid on credit cards due to the fact of utilizing credit cards in a way that are also harmful to you financially, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's now go through this whole idea of, we know that people spend too much. Okay. We know that people, and the result of that is not only the fact that they have overdraft fees and pay excessive interest rate, but they don't have any savings, right? I mean, obviously.
Right, right.
So what did you actually create?
So I created a mobile game, and it's similar to Pokemon Go. And the idea is that I'll be able to walk 10 minutes to the beach in Venice and, via augmented reality on my phone, create an underground bunker where I can stash savings that I can't touch, so that when I'm tempted to spend, I won't have access to the funds. And I will literally have to walk 10 minutes to the beach in order to get those funds. And the notion is that by the time I walk that 10 minutes, I'll no longer have that temptation anymore.
But you can get the money, but you have to actually physically do something. It's like the old days, by the way, where you actually had to go to a bank and get money. And if it was on a weekend, you were out of luck.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because now it's just so the access to money is so easy. Just, you get Venmo, you get the bank, you got all this stuff going on. So when you say that you can't get to the money, though, you hit it in some kind of underground bunker, whether you dug a hole or whether you went down a manhole. But in California now, it's called a maintenance hole. Can't call it a manhole anymore. It's a maintenance hole in California. So you go down into this bunker and you deposit, I don't know, $25.
Sure.
And it's sitting underneath a rock in this bunker.
Yes.
Okay. So that's placement number one, because there's more than one placement, I assume, right?
Yes. You can store $25 anywhere you want.
All right.
Yeah.
So now I store it in a coconut on a tree somewhere.
Yes.
All right. So now I go back home. I do my thing. The idea is, okay, I stored that money. It's in a place. I can't get to it unless I return to the place. Is that the point?
That's the point, yes. And to make you even more accountable, you could assign your best friend who lives a mile away from you as sort of an accountability partner, to where he would have to be present at the location as well.
So you got to drag him out of bed too.
Oh, yeah. It's not.
I'm sorry. It's just kind of funny. You know, the thought of.
It's hilarious.
So it is, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So now, what if you have this $25 stored underneath this rock in this underground bunker. And let's say you have 25 different places that you did this. And you got, I don't know, $3,000 sitting in all sorts of augmented reality places that you stored. And for whatever reason, and maybe it's a reasonable reason, let's say you're going to buy a house. I don't know, something good.
Right.
You want to get to that money. But you don't remember exactly where you put it. What happens next?
It's mapped out. You can, just like on Pokemon Go, where you can sort of zoom out on a map, you'll see exactly where you stored your cash. It's not, the point isn't to sort of make it a mystery. It's just to make it a bit more challenging.
Now, when it comes to the storage of the money, where is it actually held? It's held just inside the game?
That's right, yeah.
So it's in your own little locker or a wallet.
Right. The money's there the whole time. You just can't release it until you walk to a geographic location that you, quote unquote, stored it in.
So So let's just go on to another point here. So once you get the once you do this, is Bunkio, are you holding the money or it's just a lock point? The money, in other words, so I send you $2,000 and I say, you know what, I'm going to go on a little hunt and I'm going to go store this around town.
Right.
All right. I'm going to go into the library and put it in between the Huckleberry Finn book on page 25 to 26.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you know, to this restaurant and I'm going to put it in between this ham sandwich that's on the counter. Whatever. I'm going to put it in all these places, right? I don't know if you get that refined or not, but okay. And that actual money, the initial $2,000 that I put into the system, where is that held?
So we would partner with a bank, theoretically. This is a concept deck for a concept I've been sculpting for 2 years now that I'm ready to finally manifest.
All right. So now, and then what you're going to try to look is for some capital.
Right.
Obviously, that's the next thing is looking for some capital to try to get this done. So yes. I understand that, but those people that have this spending. So let's just take your situation because let's just go there. Okay. Mm-hmm. You had a drinking problem, obviously. You just told me that. I'm not accusing you. You told me that, right?
Yeah.
So you had a drinking problem and a spending problem, or a spending problem or a drinking problem, but you had some kind of addictions and it was all manifesting through this drinking and spending process.
Yep.
And in the state that you were during the time before you started your recovery, you wouldn't have probably wanted to do this, would you?
Yeah, I would have loved to have done this.
But it's only after the fact, during, if you're doing something wrong and all that, you're gambling, you're taking drugs, you're drinking and stuff like that, are you going to really want to hide money?
I would have wanted to. Yeah, I thought of this before I stopped drinking.
Okay.
And while I was very heavy in my spending problem.
Mm-hmm. So, but you don't think like things like putting money into an IRA, which is a tax deductible instrument with a penalty upon withdrawal, is enough of a roadblock? Is that what you're also thinking?
My parents gifted me with an IRA. Look, my best friends throughout life have been people like you who are just super intelligent in finance. And they never understood why I was wired the way I was and why I couldn't grasp concepts like something as simple as the IRA. And I'll never be able to answer it either. And I stopped questioning it and I just started accepting that I'm wired a little different and I'm trying to create survival methods to exist and to, you know, be able to have a family like my friends have. And that's why I created the app.
No, I get it with the whole wiring thing because, you know what, listen, I live on the water. And I see all these people on a paddleboard going by, and I'm thinking, why? I don't understand. You know, it just doesn't work. The other people are probably wondering, why do I have a power boat? You know, why aren't I getting out there on the paddle boat? And it's great exercise. I'm thinking, no, that looks so awful. Looks awful. Yeah. So yeah, I get how different people relate to different things. And money's not the easiest thing. You know, don't kill yourself on the money item. Because it is a hard concept for most people. That's why you have people in my industry that specialize in it. But at the same time, when it comes to, so what did you do? When you came up with this idea, were you actually hiding money around the house?
I started to after I thought of this. I was sort of like, well, why don't I put my money where my mouth is? So I started doing exactly what you just said, and then I wouldn't be able to find the money, and then I would sort of be screwed, and I would have to like ask friends to borrow money, which is horrible when you're in your 30s. It's just not okay. So I just lived a very unmanageable life, and I made good money, and that's the sad thing. And people would wonder, what are you spending your money on? So I just had to sort of surrender. I was living a weird life, and I didn't want to do it anymore. So
I mean, the other option is similar to what you're doing, because what you're doing is creating a – see, what you're doing here, it seems to me at least, with having a secondary party required to maybe go with you on that journey and get that coconut off the tree and stand with you and do it. And so you need a two-factor authentication in
yes.
here. Is that it's similar to like a trust where you can actually have a trust that's set up, whether the trustee is a corporate trustee like a bank or maybe even another party similar to what you're talking about. So you have a friend who's a trustee on a trust, and the money can only be released by them. In other words, it's your money, even though it's in a trust. It's a trust that is not in your name. It's specific, you know, we call it a spendthrift trust, for example, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's like spendthrift trust the game is what you're doing. And what you do is you say, you know, that there's only a certain amount of money that can be taken out, but it has to be authorized by the then acting trustee, which would not be you. But if you ask the trustee for the money, then they have to confirm, say yes, and the money can be given to you. The money can't necessarily be given to anybody else. So what you're doing is trying to make the spendthrift trust concept a bit more, fun. The other thing you're doing when you have this deck that I read of yours is you have multiple other items. It's not just about the concept of, okay, I'm putting money here because I want to squirrel it away and I want to make sure that I don't touch it. And if I do touch it, it has to be for certain reasons and maybe even get a secondary party. But you're also going to be trying to create an environment in real life through augmented reality that will give you reminders of what not to do. For example, I think I saw in your thing something about blurring out certain signs and places in the real world.
That's correct. Yeah. It's called Bunkio Vision. It's phase 3. So I see that 5 years after the initial product releases.
So take us through that. Take us through like a real life. We're driving down the road.
Right. You're driving down the road, and the best way to explain it is actually referencing that Roddy Rowdy Piper movie, They Live, where it works the same way. So for instance, I would feel, my head would tell me, okay, well, I have to have dinner at this spot I love. And the entrees happen to be like $55 and the cocktails were $15. And I would have dinner there about 3 times a week. And I didn't realize, you know, any of the psychological reasons why I wouldn't just go to the grocery store or anything like that. But the point is that this technology would render locations like that invisible. And even more than that, indicative arrows would point me toward more responsible spending locations like the grocery store. So it's not only canceling out the bad ideas, but it's pointing me toward the good ideas in terms of spending habits.
You know, I just saw a movie about this. What movie I see? There was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
I think it was it Clive Owen? It was somebody who the punishment in life, depending on the severity of it, is that you can't see the other person or other people can't see you. You'd be invisible.
That's Black Mirror. Yeah, that was a Black Mirror episode.
Oh, yes. And right. Yeah.
Same thing. It was so good. I didn't see that when I thought of this. And once I saw that, I was like, well, this is perfect. It's the same thing. So it's not that original. I feel like Black Mirror episodes are almost predictive programming. I definitely think all of those ideas could happen. So. Yeah,
so that's exactly. Your generation. In my generation, it was Star Trek.
Yeah.
Everything except for the food replicator, essentially everything else has pretty much come true in terms of the communicators and just a variety of other things, Bluetooth and wireless earpieces and just a whole host of things. And I guess transporters aren't there either. But nonetheless, there was a lot of things in Star Trek that predicted the future. So so therefore, you're going to have to tie up with a bank. Now, have you talked to any banks about this yet?
I haven't. You know, I have a friend whose wife is like a former top-level executive at Microsoft. And just having a conversation with this guy, who's an old pal, and hearing his eyes light and seeing his eyes light up and sort of saying, oh, wow, you know, we could partner you with a former CEO of a bank or whatever. He didn't have those relationships, but just seeing how confident he was in the potential of that reality happening gave me sort of hope. And I think that while none of those people I would potentially meet with could relate to this idea, they probably have somebody in their family or know somebody in their peripheral who has these same issues. So I don't think it's like that unrelatable. So
what's interesting is because you're going to be battling the banks, you know that, right? So you're battling on one side. So on one side, they're happy that there's more cash on hand. On the other side, if you know, just a little idea here, a thought, a little insight. If you start telling them that it's going to help people with their overdraft fees, you're out the door.
Got it.
I mean, right? Do you know that, right?
You know, I'm stupid, man. So now I
I mean, if this 34, what do you say, $34 billion overdraft fees a year?
Yeah.
Where does that go to? It goes to the bank. What does the bank have to do to get those overdrafts? As a matter of fact, wouldn't you almost say that the banks have a vested interest in you overdrafting?
That they have a what?
A vested interest in you overdrafting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So therefore, you present this to a bank and you tell them it's going to help people not overdraft. They're going to be like, huh?
And you're right. And you're right.
That's like going to McDonald's and telling them, you know what? This will help people stop buying that extra burger.
Yeah. That's really funny. You're right. So I need to get creative with that.
Yeah, you need to get creative and talk about how it's going to possibly increase their deposits or go to a smaller bank that doesn't really rely on overdraft fees as a big part of their overall revenue and earnings because that drops right to the bottom line. There is no expense related for them on overdrafting, except for the fact they may have to move money over for an extra day or so. But it covers it. That's why the fees are so high because until you get the money back in, they're going to charge you, $30 or something like that for an overdraft?
Yeah, that's right.
And you could overdraft for $2 and still cost you $30.
It happened to me the other week. Like, it still happens. It's
still happening? What do you mean?
Yeah. I'm telling you. I've increased my spending habits. I started going to a program for compulsive spending called Debtors Anonymous, and they have these tools that I started using that are helping a lot, and I fell off the wagon for 1 week and stopped using the tools, and then next thing I know, I lost track of spending, and I overdrafted. So that's another thing that this app will do. It's going to sort of force people to use tools. This is going to be sort of a shock factor statement, but I want people to spend a lot of money on this mobile app game so that they need to hit us up and ask us to release their money, and we give them a loan. We issue them sort of a payday loan, and then they with strings attached, and they actually have to do the tools that I learn in the compulsive spending meetings I go to in order to receive the loan, because I feel like the app can actually heal people's spending issues that way. So we're not only trying to put a Band-Aid over this issue. I feel like this app can actually fix people with these problems as well. And I know that's a bit of a detour from what we're talking about.
Hold a second. Now you get to offer payday loans, which are advancements on their paychecks, which usually charge a significant amount of money, which the government's actually looking to crack down on, which I happen to be very much against, but not the crackdown, but I'm against the payday loans. But isn't that an enticement? I don't know. Personally, I'm just telling you from me listening to you, talking to you and here, just two guys talking here.
Yeah.
That pisses me off.
Well, tell me about that. That's interesting because I don't believe you've ever had to take out a payday loan because you've needed one.
No, but you know, do you know why?
Why?
I'll tell you why. When I first was starting out, I had this I do this to this day, by the way. Any amount of change that I would get, if I paid $2.35 for something and I gave them $3, I never use my change, give them $3, I get 65 cents back, I'd put that in my pocket. At the end of the day, this is when I first started out, at the end of the day, I'd put that on my counter, I'd put that in a bottle, I'd put it in a jar, I'd put it somewhere, okay?
Right.
At the end of the week, when I didn't have enough money to buy stuff and all that, first of all, I figured, okay, what can I afford? Because I was on, week to week kind of paycheck to paycheck deal. what I would do is I would go to the change and figure out how much money I could spend on dinner. I had $8 and change. That's what I spent. I knew I was getting paid the next day. And maybe what I would do is get a little bit of leftovers, but I wouldn't go out. The difference is that I wouldn't. And what did I ever take loans? Of course I've taken loans. I have mortgages and cars and as a matter of fact, my first apartment, I got like a $2,000 loan that my dad co-signed with for me to buy furniture and to get junk in the house. And I had a 24-month payment plan. As a matter of fact, my first car phone, I didn't say cell phone, I said car phone. My first car phone was an Oakey back in like 1988. It was like $2,000 for this thing that didn't even really work. And it cost me $2,000. I paid it off over 2 years. But I paid the monthly amount that was required. Now, again, could I ever go to a pawn shop, go to a payday loan? The point, though, was that while it was, I guess, available, it was beyond distasteful for me to do so. And I decided, and here's where the differential comes, not good or bad, just a differential. Okay. I wouldn't spend, I wouldn't buy, I'd go hungry for a meal. I wouldn't eat until I had the money in my pocket. That's not to say that I didn't have credit cards. I had credit cards too. And my first few credit cards, I ramped up to the maximum, paid the minimum per month. Then finally, when I had some money, I paid the whole thing off, you know, and kind of moved along and did, you know, took loans from other places if I needed them. But what I'm saying is when you have these high priced deals and when you are living so close to the edge of the beginning of the week and the end of the week with your paycheck, you've got to change what you're doing. Maybe you shouldn't have that apartment. That's the lesson. The lesson is also probably what you need to do is figure out what they're spending money on. And explain to them that if you just, you know, it's like a mortgage. If you pay 12 times a year, you pay it off in 30 years. If you pay it every 2 weeks instead of, you know, you divide it out and pay, you cut your mortgage down to like 16-year or 15-year mortgage. It's just a different way of doing the same thing. Maybe they shouldn't eat out 3 times a week. Or maybe right. When you eat out, don't finish your freaking meal. Take a little bit of it home for breakfast.
Yes. Yes, there's so many points you just outlined that are incredible. And instead of commenting on the payday loan, I want to – okay, so real quick. Whenever – with the bank card that comes with Bunkio, micro amounts are auto-withdrawn from your account and stored. Well, they're all on your card, but they're locationally stored at your local grocery store and gas station so that the amounts you're going to end up needing tomorrow are out of your account today. So that is sort of to, that's in response to eating out 3 times a week. The idea is removing that money from your account altogether and having it stored at like a grocery store. And it works the same way as the underground bunkers to where it's all on your card. You just have to be locationally at the grocery store in order to spend.
Right.
So in response to the auto payday loan, so my idea isn't to structure it the same way in terms of like, oh, we'll get this big return and that's what our business model is built off of. Like, that's not the idea. The idea is more like a la Fight Club, where in order to – you have to lose every – it's metaphor for you have to lose everything in order to be free to do anything. So that's the same sort of philosophy I'm going off of. So if somebody's desperate and they need like a quick loan – like I've needed several times. And look, Andrew Horowitz, you are a man of integrity. You've done a lot of incredible things, and I feel lucky to even talk to you. A lot of – listen, I'm not blowing smoke. A lot of people do not have self-will and do not have integrity, and I feel like this is like the chastity belt they've always needed to – it's like braces for your mouth but for spending in order to like slowly develop – the habits that can get them at a more responsible place in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believe the app is really. So
yeah, maybe even implement some kind of a reward system, actually a reward system of both sides. So a reward system and a penalty system for inappropriate spending and for proper spending. So you know how you in various games, you do something, you win, you get like more power.
Yeah. If somebody's, you got it.
Is that something new or you already designed this?
No. I had an idea that may not be as good as yours. I'm happy to tell you mine, but I'd rather hear yours.
No, all I was saying is if there's some kind of reward and a penalty, just like any kind of these online games, you know, you get slashed, you get like a less of a life, less of a life, less of a life, or you do something good. You know, for example, you know, you don't get killed for a while. You kind of build up, and you can take the storage little blue diamond, put it on the side, and that's like a big reward, and maybe grab it at one time in the future when you really need it.
I have to process it. I like it.
Yeah. So cool stuff. I mean, it's interesting. I think the idea is interesting. The understanding of self is even more interesting. And the discussion of trying to, the word fix, I don't like the word fix. You know, I'm not one that really cares about titles and all that, but fix is not the right word. It's more like refine. Mm-hmm. You know, refine your habits, refine what you're doing, you know, give yourself a chance because, you know, listen, Adam, you keep going on the same track, you're going to end up retiring in exactly the same place that you were when you were like 15 with no, unless you get some kind of inheritance. And then if you do so, you're going to probably spend it. You can't do all that because you got to figure out a way that you could live.
You're right. You're right.
That's the bottom line. You have to sustain yourself. You've graduated from somebody spoon feeding you peas and carrots, right? You could feed yourself. So now you kind of got to go next level, I guess. I'm not trying to give you total advice here, but I'm saying that this is a good tool. But at the same time that, you know, you have to, I think, realize that you can't have everything right now. That's a problem. How old are you?
36.
Oh, you're 36. You're not young. You're not old. But, you know, your generation, I'm not that much older, but, you know, the younger generations want everything now. You know, my son, he's like, hey, Dad, you're doing real well. Yeah, I think that I want to buy a house soon. I'm like, what? You just graduated college. How are you buying a house?
Yeah.
You know, how's that happening? Well, it seems like a good deal. You know, you've had these houses, you made money on them. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't get them right. It took me, and I had to suffer. I didn't go out for that, you know, that tomahawk chop and that really great glass of 1992 Cabernet, you know, and a molten lava cake for dessert every, you know, week.
Yeah.
And when I did that, things were not so good.
Yeah.
So I also didn't eat White Castle all the time. I did eat White Castle. I didn't eat White Castle all the time. A lot of Greek food. I remember a lot of Greek food in my early days. A lot of gyros. But anyway, Adam Wright, listen, from Bunkio, an interesting concept on the idea of changing your spending habits and breaking the cycle of overdrafts, of spending too much, spend thrifting, if you will, and compulsive spending. So I appreciate it. Let's keep in touch. Let's figure out how this this all plays out. We'll have all the information on Bunkio, the basic information, the concept deck links or links to Adam on the website over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number 622. Hey, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Well, nothing else interesting, a little bit different than what we usually talk about, but I thought it was kind of this really in the spirit of what we talk about here in terms of finance and a totally different concept. I don't know how it's going to go. I wish him the best of luck. I'm not sure what you think about it. You can let me know. But there is a problem, obviously, with spending for some people and holding on to their money. And maybe there is something to be said about hiding it under a rock, under a garbage can, or maybe in a store somewhere virtually so you can't get your hands on it. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's really important that you do send your questions in through Ask Andrew. Just go over to disciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button there and just send in your question because we're going to use those for the next show moving forward for next week. Then I'll come back and report on my safari and all that. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word on Twitter. For those of you that use Twitter a lot, do you like the new layout? I don't know. A lot of people are complaining about it and they're probably just not used to it. It looks okay to me. I mean, you can make it different modes and dark and light and medium, pretty much the same. You just got to get used to it. But Twitter did have a good week. Stock was up dramatically after their earnings, as was Google. Tesla, on the other hand, not so good. You know, it's interesting about Tesla. Just take a second on this. When it came to Tesla a few quarters ago, and when Elon Musk was doing his conference call saying that, you know what, moving forward, we are going to be profitable all the way through infinitum. It was like, well, how's that going to be? They had one quarter that was profitable and they came through on that. And of course it was due to massive cost cutting, ramping up production into that quarter, doing everything they could to actually get that number positive for the quarter. And then from there, yeah, that was it. Negative earnings again. And I got to tell you something. For those of you that love Tesla, I think the cars are darn cool. I think that the innovation technology is fantastic. I think that the way the company is run is piss poor. I think the management really has their heads up their asses. The outright and very clear, we'll say, mistruths and manipulation of the information that has been going on, that's something that should have been reason for a board of directors to fire the CEO. The tweet of 420 secured should have been reason on its own to let a CEO go. That's just an unacceptable outright lie. And that just doesn't have anywhere in the world for, you know, in the world of finance. So Tesla, like I said, I'm very mixed about it. I really do like the company's products, many of the products, and the technology and all the things they're doing. But just get rid of Musk already. Just get rid of him. I'm sure if he hears this, he's going to come after me and call me a pedo or something. You know, that's the way he does things. But I really, maybe he can look inside and he can think about all the things that he's done that's really wronged a lot of people, whether it's the shorts, whether it's the longs. I mean, right now, the longs are suffering because of a lot of things that he did trying to get back at the shorts. And that's a truth. Being so captivated and obsessed with the short sellers that were, you know, trying to prove him wrong really hurt a lot of their outlook. And it really hurt a lot of the belief in the company's abilities, moreover, the management's abilities to become profitable. And that usually is the case. When management is so focused in on shorts and things that really are not part of their core business and the stock itself, I mean, you need to focus on your business. That is your business. The stock is not your business. With that, we're going to close it up for this week. I want to thank you for joining me. I want to mention that, of course, you can subscribe. Tell your friends. You can go over to iTunes or any podcast directory that's out there. There's hundreds of them these days. Any way to download it, whether it's on the mobile, whether it's on the computer, you can set up to subscribe. Make sure to tell your friends about it. Send a nice note. Say, hey, check this out. I'm waiting to listen to Disciplined Investor Horowitz. He's got some things to say. He's got some interesting guests. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you for joining me. And I will see you again, well, next week, even though I won't be in town. I'll get something for you. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.